It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18+. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's not many times that you could turn around and say that you have a living legend, no matter how humble that they want to be now, no matter how humble that they're saying that they're giving all their glory to God, which I totally understand.
Yeah.
But right now, on the Fighters, right, Dream It, Believe It, Become It, come on up, we have the former WBO middleweight and WBC super middleweight champion of the world. And it'd be wrong just to call you Nigel Benn or the Dark Destroyer without me hearing this.
Right. Okay.
Right. I'm just saying.
I didn't hear it.
You didn't hear it?
I know Dangerous. I heard the beat and that's about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was just that. When I heard, listen, to me growing up as a kid, and I'm talking at that time now, I'm like 13 years old. Just to hear just that.
Yeah.
And there was certain guys that revolutionized boxing as far as I was concerned when it came to hairstyles. Everybody had like the Mike Tyson.
Don't even talk about
I'm sorry about Golden Knight. You know what I mean?
I had so many.
No. The standout one was the kind of mohawk when it went down into the back, into the V, Nigel Benn, right?
I'm going to tell you something now.
Go on.
I saw this mixed race guy, right? And he had his hair cut really nice, man. I thought, mate, I like that hairstyle. But mine didn't turn out like his. So I was left with what I had. So you know what I mean? So that's how it was. I caught this mixed race guy, good looking guy, had his good hair shape really well. And I just followed him. I tried to copy him. Didn't turn out right, though.
Well, because you know what? It weren't faded, but it worked. I'll tell you why it worked, yeah? It worked at that time there because I remember coming to school.
You got a fade on yours. You see, mine
always
didn't have a fade.
Yeah, no, but it worked because I remember at that time coming into school and like kids at school, and I went to a multicultural school, but white kids. Oh, I'm getting a Nigel Benn Spence. I'm getting a Nigel.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, what? And they'll get it proper like the Nigel. Yeah, Nigel. And also, who else kind of cut the Nigel Benn? Vinnie Jones.
Vinnie Jones had
a Nigel Benn as well.
Yeah, I know, mate. I know.
That was the influence that you had, my friend.
Yeah. That was funny, man.
Like, a lot of people don't realize, like, of the time when you came out, John Sims, my old amateur coach, from the Lynn, he was saying he remembers the night that you beat Rod Douglas in the ABA final. Yeah? And you ran around the whole of the Wembley Arena with the trophy, like how elated you were. You know what I mean? How much did that mean to you at that time? And then how much also did it mean to you that you never got picked for the 1984 Olympics?
Commonwealth, not Olympics.
Oh, sorry, Commonwealth Games. My apologies. 86 Commonwealth Games.
No, do you know what it is? I think you had John Lyons, you had Rod Douglas, you had your blue-eyed boys, you know, and you can't, and that is why I was really not an amateur fighter, because at the end of the day, you had people that, you know, they had their favourites. All through the amateurs, they had their favourites. I was never an amateur man, but I wanted to win the ABAs. Didn't really care about the Commonwealth. I should have gone for the Commonwealth. Didn't care about the Commonwealth. Didn't care about the Olympics. I wanted to go out there and turn professional. Because I didn't... Not like I like to... I don't like following rules. I've done that for a whole of my career in the army. So I like to follow rules, but the biasness, you know, and not only that, to tell you the truth, a lot to do with racism as well, back in the day. But I wasn't going to play none of that. I was not going to play none of that. I stood my ground in a lot of things. I stood my ground and I was not going to budge. You know, whoever I was with, whoever was my manager, because at the end of the day, I had five different trainers. I had about three or four different managers. I'm the one that called the shots. I'm not being disrespectful to anything, but I know a lot of the times we were shortchanged. You know, it's only when I separated from certain people that I started making money. You know,
I remember it was at that time the News of the World. Now you see, I could talk to you because you were my childhood, Nige. So yeah. it was you, Watson, Eubank. You were like the whole generation, because the generation before that, it was like Hel Graham,
Errol Christie,
Mark Kaler, Tony Simpson. Like those are the guys. But it was like when you came about, it was a different rush of energy, because you literally, when they called you like the Dark Destroyer, you was like seek and destroy. Like, no, we're gonna have it. I remember you knocking out Ian Chandler in
13 seconds, I think.
13 seconds, including the count. Right?
And first punch,
right? And I remember getting work experience, like, as a kid. I got work experience in 89. I got work experience. And I remember the guys inside the office at the Boxing Monthly. That's how I got my work experience, right? And they liked me so much, they gave me a job. They gave me a Saturday job because I was just mad into boxing, right? And there was a guy in there, I'm going to shout him in, his name was Robin Jones, and he had the largest boxing collection in Europe on VHS videos, right? So he'd ply me with loads of videotapes. You have to buy them for like a tenner, but he doesn't. Now you can have them because he's like me. So I had all of your fights, yo. Like every single one of your fights. I had every single one of your fights. So, and you just didn't play. Where did you get that kind of ferociousness from?
I think you know what it is. Being honest with you, because of what happened to my brother, that kind of changed me. I was just angry. Mm. I lost a brother. I was very close.
How to. You was 9 years old?
Eight.
8 years old.
Yeah. 1972. So it kind of changed me. I was just angry. And the only way I can describe it is just like when Simba lost Mufasa. He was walking around in the wilderness. Mm. Until he became an adult. Same with me. I was just walking. When I was fighting, I was still in the wilderness. Even though I was still in the wilderness. Because I never dealt with... And people don't realise that when you have childhood trauma, and it was so funny. I remember I used to see people on TV, someone had been molested by this guy, that guy, and it happened like, you know, 25, 30 years ago. And they'd be like, oh, mate, I can't get over it. I said, from you, you was a little kid and all that. And you know, now I look at myself, mate, I'm in that same position. And now I remember, so what they go through is like that childhood trauma never left me until I dealt with it. And that was until I was in my 40s that I dealt with it.
Wow.
Took me a long time. Because I just kind of like, you know, I didn't... I didn't, I didn't know how to deal with it. I was just angry. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like, I hate racism. If I've got a black guy around me that don't like white people, he's not around me, mate. He can't be around my family. I'm not going to have that toxic energy around me. I can't have that. Any racism around that. And you know why? Because a lot of the people that we grew up with, my dad and all that, were blacks and whites. We all got on good back in the 70s. The Josh and Keith cricket, they go, come on, England. My dad said, come on, West Indies. We had good banter, honest banter. So we grew up with that. They, you know, Florrie, God rest her soul, who used to ask me, white woman, from when I was 6 weeks old, help my mum. So we grew up with that. We never had no racism around.
You grew up multicultural. That's how you grew up.
100%. 100%. And so, and most of all the guys around where we live, all the black, we had all white friends, everything. So I grew up that way. So when this kind of hit me, hit me hard.
Okay. So like, on the recommendation of counselors, because like, I know, like, you recently.
I didn't have counseling.
So how did you deal with it, Nige? Just having, that's still counsel, though, right? Your relationship with the most.
I can't get no higher than that. You know, and that's where I was dealing with it in my past as well, in Mallorca, Pastor Cheryl and Miguel. Okay. Help me get through it. Help me deal with it. Because it was blocked off. I didn't even know it was blocked off. I didn't even know that I was angry because of this. And as soon as he came in my life, it all just changed. I just kind of let go and actually forgive the people. And it was hard because all I wanted to go around there and mask up and hurt them. That was the truth. I wanted to mask up. And by that time, it was like, you know, and it wasn't like I could have called them people. It wouldn't have been right if I called them somebody. I could have done that a long time ago. But it's not about that. It was about me. If I had to deal with it, I would have to deal with it my way. And for many, many years, and I knew where he died because I used to go there with him when I was a little boy. I knew where he was, and so I had to deal with that. And my dad never brought me up that way. God rest his soul. My dad never brought me up to be like that. I mean, they struggled with it. It's also, it really hurt my family because mum and dad never talked about it. So it was suppressed inside me that because I said, mum, dad, we're not talking about it. So it was in there. No one for, oh my gosh, 40 odd years, never talked about it. No one ever talked about it. And it was only when my brother didn't have a headstone. So, I bought one, and then me and my mum and dad went down, and then my mum and dad just opened up and just cried, you know, because they look at it, they brought him all the way from Barbados to England, and he dies, gets murdered. So it was really hard for them, you know?
Was that like, because you were saying like that, you was walking around very angry, right? Because I got to say, like, a dear friend of both of us, Danny Mardell, God rest his soul, right?
Oh, you know Danny.
Because I know Danny very, very well. He used to sponsor me when I was boxing. And Danny Mardell would say to me, I think Danny was like a year above you at school. But he said he was.
Yeah. We used to fight.
Yeah. And Danny Mardell, and I got a shout out, his sons, Frankie and Danny Jr. as well, right? Run Trilogy. They got jewelers down in Hatton Gardens now. And like he was saying, and like, but I traveled the whole world with that man. He said to me, the thing about Nigel, about you, he said, Nigel, from a kid, was absolutely fearless. He said, when you was in the first year, right? He said, when you was in the first year and they had to go fight a rival school, you were in the first year, you were leading fourth and fifth years out to battle. He said, that's the kind of person that you were.
Barking Abbey, the school called Barking Abbey. Across the road from us. Barking Abbey. this is a National Front days, mate. They were like thick. It was like going back to Mississippi back in the 50s. Yeah. It was like that. Oh my gosh. oh my gosh, but the difference is, it wasn't just black guys, it's white guys and black guys going to fight all in the National Front. Yeah, mate, we was all together. It was a good school that we went to, blacks and whites, we all united together to come fight the National Front people. Mate, so it was, but it was like, mate, late at night, you know, but I'd go there, me and Colin Chambers, we'd go into areas that, mate, it was like Mississippi, but we wouldn't care. We'd go and hang, we'd go, we ain't changing me, stopping me from going where I wanted to. That was just me. I didn't work on fear, mate. I didn't work on fear. Never.
So what got you into boxing? Because I know before, that like, loads of people don't know that you used to do kickboxing. You was very, very good at it.
If you put Nigel Benn kickboxing 1976,
you see it. Fighting
big white man, you know, back in the day. He was a big grown man. He was like, I was only 12. He was like 26, 27, big man. I was just stunning, mate. back in the day, it was like kind of late night pictures, you know, watching Jackie Chan and the Snake and Eagle, you know, all fucking, you know, back in the day, proper martial arts film, back in the day, all subtitled and everything, you know. But you and I don't even think you was born, mate. You
were. I was watching kung fu movies. Yes, we grew up. I don't. Yeah, the Snake and the Monkey Shadow, Snake and Eagle Shadow, all of them, yeah, Drunken Master. Come on, man.
All empty. Yes, that's it. Bang.
Yeah. You know what? I tell you, he's got a massive collection of martial arts movies. Lennox Lewis.
Oh, is he?
Massive collection of them. Massive. Yeah.
Yeah. That was it. Every Friday night, we go late night pictures, mate. And we'll always have 2 pieces of chicken and chips. All the time from KFC. I remember that, mate. I remember that. We were the good old days, mate. Good old days.
So let's go, like, when you turned professional in 1987.
Yeah.
You were with Burt McCarthy, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I just got...
Don't worry.
Hold on. It's coming. Hi, Sam. Yeah, I can't talk. I'm just on the phone doing an interview with Spence.
Hello.
Yeah, he said hello, Con. It's all right. I'll speak to you soon. Love you, bud. Bye. Yeah, it was Burt McCarthy. And Burt was a good man, good, honest man. Yeah, lovely. Burt and Leslie McCarthy, two good, lovely people. But it was like Frank Warren. Was the one that was really weird. But me and Frank fell out. Mm. Over something very silly.
What was the silly thing that you fell out over, Nige?
Do you know what? I'll tell you what it was.
Yeah, I want to know.
I wanted Frank to just come and watch me train. I wanted to show him what you can invest your money. This is what to show you what you invested your money in. And he never turned up, mate. Never turned up.
At that time, beginning stage, you were training with Brian Lynch, right?
Yeah.
And because I remember of that time, because I was at school, then 87, I'm at school. And one of my mates said to me, his name was Brian Wilson. And he says to me, Nigel Benn's left Frank Warren because he was asking him to come and see him train. He'd never come. And at the time, I thought, nah, it's got to be deeper than that. Even from a young age, now I'm 13. And I said, this is all rubbish. And now you've confirmed it to me.
No, I'll tell you for why. In the army, you're disciplined. I was very disciplined. And it was like, I wanted to show you, this is what you've invested your money in. Wasn't nothing drastic, but if you haven't got time to come in, watch me. So that kind of hurt me because I wanted to show you, look what you invested your money into. And you never come. So I said, I was meant to fight on the Brian McGuigan bill at Luton.
Okay.
And okay. I didn't turn up. And then they stopped me from fighting for 6 months. And then that's when I met Ambrose Mendy.
Yeah, that was a kind of, I'm saying, like, I believe that Ambrose Mendy was way before his time on certain things that he was doing. And I remember that link up between you two, that kind of, it was a very hyped synergy with you and Ambrose Mendy.
Yeah.
But you, Nigel Benn, was everywhere, even when you were standing still. I remember you spinning all the papers. You were everywhere. Like, he was a proper hype man, as far as I'm concerned.
Ambrose knew how to sell. He knew how to do it. But don't forget, you got to understand, he was building his own platform as well. He could have been the English version of Don King.
Everybody says that. Everybody
he
said. Could have been,
and you know what it is? And he had the tools. He had the tools. You know? He had the tools. And me and him, we're inseparable. But it's really hard because it's sad the way it ended, you know?
That's part of life. But when we look at it at that time, it's like, the fights that you were having, and I remember when you won the Commonwealth title, I think you won it in, it was early, like 17 months as a pro.
Yeah, Abdullah Morosanda.
Yep. And I remember Abdullah because Abdullah boxed Tony Simpson and went fights with him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
He had a hard fight with Simpson.
Yes, I know.
And you just brushed this guy. You beat him up like he was looking for a visa.
Yeah, that was it. You know what it is? Because it's so funny, you know. And then you'll start understanding that, you know, that I only had one gear in the days. I only had one gear, first gear. I didn't know about no second gear, third gear, fourth gear, fifth gear, or whatever. I just had one gear. And you know for a fact, if you keep racing in first gear, it's going to blow up.
Yeah.
But that's way down the line. That's way down the line.
Yeah, but then things change, right? You end up fighting Michael Watson, right?
Yeah.
Which, that was a massive fight at the time, you know?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Right? Prinsbury Park in a tent, April 89. And I think Ambrose Mendy got sued over the poster because he had you in a Michael Jackson, I'm bad, right? And I think Michael Jackson's lawyers contacted you. You had to change it because you, right? Like, you're like, Michael, who's bad? That was a poster, and it was like and I think it was like for copyright infringement. But then you used to come out to Conroy Smith, I'm dangerous, right? Dangerous. When we'd hear that beginning. That beginning part of that song, the doom doom, doom, every hair on the back of your neck would stand up.
Oh, you literally make your mind stand up,
bro, because you knew what was going on. You knew, and like everybody would start, you'd hear it, and you'd be in your front room, but you start skanking in your front room.
Tell me about it.
The Michael Watson fight.
Yeah.
I had a school teacher. I'm going to be real with you. I had a school teacher called Mr. Fox. I've never seen him since. But if you watch this Mr. Fox, right? Me and him used to gamble at school. Like, we put bets on fights. Like, and I was adamant that Michael Watson was going to beat you. Not because... The reason why I thought... I'm going to tell you why. Because Michael Watson was Jamaican... Because he was Jamaican.
Oh, you're not going down that road, are you?
Nigel, I'm going to be real. Because Michael Watson was Jamaican, and one of my aunts went to church with Michael Watson's mother.
I said, nah, man.
We're going to beat up Nigel Benn, right?
Right, but you know, it's so funny you saying that. You can get back to the story in a minute. But that is the same reason why I fell up with Lloyd Hannigan. He was backing Anthony Logan. Because he's from Jamaica.
So
I thought myself, you know, I get your point, but you know, you've got some guy that come all the way, and I pulled him up about it. You know? But you know, anyway, that's another session we can have about him.
Yeah, come on. But you know what? That's that.
Yeah,
but on the great fights of what you had.
Let's stick with Michael Watson because
all right, cool.
You know, because I think at the end of the day, it was the big fight. It was a good fight. It was a guy that knew how he was going to fight. Michael had an unbelievable, he had a Marlon Sterling defense. And all I was doing was throwing punches, bang, bang, bang. We weren't even connecting with Michael. No disrespect, but he never hurt me. He never hurt me whatsoever. I wasn't hurt. The only thing that hurt was my pride.
Yeah.
I ran out of gas. Because it was like I said, I had one gear and that was it. I come back in round five and I could know my light's flashing to say, mate, you're out of fuel. And it's like, Brian, he's got it, Brian, steaming. So I'm looking in the boxing pamphlet, steaming. I can't find it in here, mate. I thought, what do you think I've been doing for the last five rounds, you know? And then that Michael just took me out and that was it. And all he done was hit me with a jab. That was it.
Yep.
I was
exhausted. Round six. Yeah.
I was exhausted. Nothing left in me. And you know what it is? I give Michael a big hug and all that. You know, respect Michael. He was a good-looking guy. Handsome. Never flagged off anybody. He was just a good man. A good man. But the other person's completely different.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get to him because you go out to America, right? You have... And you do the deal, you and Ambrose, man, you do the deal with Bob Arum and you have three fights and then you end up fighting Doug DeWitt for the WBO Championship of the World. So you're the second man in history to hold that belt. And that was a wicked fight. You know what I mean? That was an absolutely fantastic fight. April of 1990. I remember it clearly because the same day my cousin Owen got married to his wife, Wendy, and they're still married today. And Owen's Jamaican and Wendy is from Barbados. And it was one of them. And we was like, yeah, I'm a top Nigel Benn supporter now, right? But and the fight with Doug DeWitt, that was such a war. Because remember, he floors you.
Yeah. But he floored me. But you know what? He hit me right in the chin, right? We both threw left hooks together at the same time.
Yep. His one was a bit shorter than yours and he caught you.
Yeah. But when he hit me pinpoint on target. But where he hit me, it wasn't like in my head. So I was all dazed. It just hit me right in the chin. I went down, my legs just went, but it did not hurt me whatsoever. And the referee was counting. I was like, yeah, I'm okay. And then the next round come out. And then I give it to him. But
proper.
You got to understand, Spence, we were fighting with 8 ounce gloves on. Mm. Not 10 ounce. They were 8 ounce gloves. And I could feel my knuckles in them. And I mean, I've never hit any man as hard as I've hit Doug DeWitt. Never. Nobody comes close. 8 ounce gloves. 8 ounce gloves. I mean, I just hit him. And I knew I was hurting him. I knew my punches were sinking in hard. And at that time, it was just like, I was just throwing everything at him. I didn't care what he done. He was too busy trying to roll and block him. No, it wasn't working. If you're not throwing punches to keep me away, I'm coming for you. That was it.
It's like, the amazing thing is like, a few days ago, marks the 33rd year of your absolute war with Iran the Blade Barkley.
Yeah.
A fight. What a fight.
Do you know? Yeah, but you know what it is? I'll be honest with you, Spence. I didn't want the three knockdown rules because I know I would have stopped him. I just knew I would have stopped. I didn't want the three knockdown rules. I wanted to get up. So I can hit him down again. I wanted to get up so I can knock him down again. I didn't want the three knockdown. I knew I would have beat the granny out of him. I just knew I would have beat him. I didn't want the three knockdown rules. I really didn't because I would have been on him. I just know, you know, and you know, and you know, you know, that it was like my fitness level and my determination was like 10 times more than what I had for Doug DeWitt. Because I know already he sparked Tommy Hearns twice. So I already knew what his capability was. But he was just big, strong, and heavy-handed. But I know for his one punch, I can hit him about five times before he hit me with one.
You were very, very quick. You were very fast. Like, there was that. And then we move on to November of 1990. at the Birmingham NEC, you versus Chris Eubank. That people don't like younger kids now. When we talk about Ben Eubank, I don't think they realize how massive that rivalry was.
It was one of these guys. I'll tell you what it was. It was like, I didn't get on with him. I just disliked him. I can't say, like, you know, I knew the strong word of hate. I don't hate anybody, but I really disliked him. I didn't hate him because I ain't got no reason to hate him, but he just rubbed me up the wrong way. It was just like, he tries to make, you know, people inferior of who he is. He thinks that he speaks the Queen's language and all that. But you know what? I know he's got one of the most vilest mouth going, mate. And I can say that. And he knows, because I even told him, why do you swear so much? I told him this. Because I know he has some blinds, like, he's gone out of fashion, but yet he wants to speak the Queen's English, you know. But so when I saw him, one thing I've got to give him, he's the sharpest dresser going, mate. Oh, my gosh. He put on a suit and it fit him like a glove. I thought it's nowhere in God's green earth. Philip Schofield, one of the best dressed men. Nobody can touch Eubanks around at that time. He was always sharp. His suit, everything, he was just immaculate. He was immaculate. So, you know, and he carried himself well. He carried himself well. Still don't like him, though.
It is what it is. Like, after all of your fabulous career, now you've got your son who's boxing now. I'm gonna keep this one really short.
Because
we just had Connor just jump on to say hello to you. And it was like, do you think like your son got the backlash from the Board of Control because of when the time when you ripped up your license?
I get that, Spence. I don't know, and I've been thinking about it, right? It's like, why are they so hard on Conor now? They've appealed it. And I know he'll get off again by the grace of God. There go I. I believe that he will get off. But yet, there's other things, like, you know, you watch Amir Khan fight Kell Brook, yet they come back a year later and saying, oh, we tested him that year. What? A year later? But yet you was on Conor. You was on Conor straight away. I think, oh, my gosh. And you know what? And it's so funny. We can go down that road. But you know what it is? Conor spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds to clear his name. A guilty man don't do that. A guilty man don't do that. If he was my son, and I thought he was guilty, I said, son, yeah, mate, you deal with this on your own. You ain't coming to ruin my name. You ain't ruining my name. I work hard to get my name where it is. But I know my son. If I look at myself now, I still now, me, nearly 60 in January, I train twice a day, every day. And like, when I look at my fitness level, me at my peak, I'm here. Connor already is up here. His fitness level is completely different. He don't need no testosterone. He's got that in him already, naturally. He's just an absolute animal when it comes to training, breaking records here with his fitness level. I love watching him train. I know my son.
Nigel Benn?
Yeah.
Been an absolute plum pleasing pleasure to speak to the living legend that is Nigel Benn.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.